Moncrief on News Talk.
The old cliche is that sex sells, and in many aspects of business, that is true, especially in magazines. For 17 years, Joe Elvin was editor of the UK edition of Glamour magazine, a competitor to Cosmo, and for most of that time had to deal with the pressure of having to include a number of sex-based articles in each edition, something she reflected on in an article in today's London Times. Joe, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
Not too bad. Now, from day one, was it part of your brief as the editor of Glamour that you had to include a certain amount of sex in it?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and was it, and explicit is maybe not the best word, but was it explicit as to how you went about presenting the various sex items?
I'm not sure what you mean. No, I was never graphic. I was never, here's the instruction manual, here's the pictures. It wasn't really like that. It was more that I felt like, you know, our biggest competitor, the number one in the market before Glamour launched, was Cosmopolitan, and their biggest selling point was sex. So it felt silly to ignore that because that was a huge draw for their enormous amount of readers. But you want to be something different. And so I definitely leaned into a certain amount of sex content in Glamour magazine, but I wanted it to be more focused around, or, you know, the conversations that I knew that my girlfriends and I were having about intimacy issues or commitment issues or just, you know, the anxieties people felt about, were they doing it enough or not enough? And it was all those emotional connections around it that I was more interested in.
Yeah, rather than position of the month or that kind of stuff.
Yes, well, certainly More Magazine was a huge magazine back in the day, and they had definitely made that iconic little number their own. So that would have just looked really stupid to copy that.
Yeah. Now, and did you notice a correlation between sales and the amount of sex-based articles you might have in any given
issue? I think
issue.
What I noticed a correlation between was because there was always sex, but it was if I shouted about it on the cover, we were rewarded. It was more that if I sort of experimented with quieting down that message on the cover or omitting that message from the front cover, then, and you got to remember that this is back in the days before smartphones, where magazines were so buoyant that, you know, what you did on the cover really mattered because people went to the newsstand and thought, I've got Marie Claire, I've got Glamour, I've got Cosmo, I'm going to weigh this up for 5 minutes. And that's where we saw the difference in what we said on the cover made a difference to how we sold that month.
And did it get to the point, because you do allude to this in the piece you wrote for the Times, that you were basically given a quota, there had to be three pieces?
Yeah. And the other thing that, and I'm not telling tales out of school because my boss Nicholas wrote about this in his memoir a few years ago. It was called The Glossy Years. And he'd given me the directive that we have to be 15% less saucy and racy than Cosmo, 15% less serious than Marie Claire. And I completely understood where he was coming from, but we still needed the elements that those magazines had to try and turn the heads of their readers.
Right, 15% is very exact. How did you estimate that?
You know what? It sounds very exact, but I think one thing that I really enjoyed about my working relationship with my boss, Nicholas, is that we were always very simpatico on our gut instincts for editorial. So I can't explain it. I just got what he meant.
Yeah. Okay. And is it, though, when you look back at it now, is it a reflection of a far more innocent time? Because, as you say, it was before smartphones, but it was before the widespread accessibility of pornography.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I think what's interesting is that the delivery methods of the way people have content has changed, but the baseline desires and anxieties and questions that human beings have never change. They never change. Everybody wants to know how to have good relationships, good love, good sex lives, normal sex lives, all of those things. But I don't think that the mediums available to people are reassuring in the same way. I think that, yes, there's an amazing amount of infinite information online, but it's not curated. So you can go searching for something online and you're going to also find within that search, and I think particularly of teenagers when I think of this, Sean, you're going to find within those search lots of things that you don't want to see or perhaps you shouldn't see. Whereas the printed, you know, very old fashioned, very analog form of a magazine, it was all completely targeted and packaged for that audience. We knew what was right for them, what they wouldn't want to see, what, you know, was perhaps harmful for them to see. And we edited accordingly.
Well, you could also say that the underlying message, if you like, in a lot of your content was, if you feel a bit insecure about X, Y, or Z, it's okay. A lot of other people feel the same, whereas a lot of the content you'll find online purposefully makes you feel insecure.
I think so. And I think that there's definitely... there's more, I think the people that are sort of like giving that kind of content online at the moment, they're very much, they're, you know, big time influencers who are very much putting themselves first, their individual self first as a brand. So you're not going to find a lot of people in that space who are willing to show weakness or to, you know, let people into the darker corners of their anxieties and their fears. Whereas I definitely, as a women's magazine editor who grew up a very timid, very, very late blossoming teen. I think that that's where I always brought my editing slant to, is like to edit for the least reassured woman in any room.
Mm, yeah. Also as well, was it a difficulty in the sense that, you know, you knew that sex sold, but you had to kind of cast a balance between having a certain amount of this content because people wanted it, but also for advertisers and, you know, for all the other content in the magazine.
Yes. And it became, you know, a constant frustration and a tension between, you know, the things that you knew were the populist bits of the magazine that people might not freely admit is what they bought the magazine for, versus, you know, the slightly more refined, the more beautiful bits of the content, the fashion, the lifestyle, all of those things. But what I said in the piece in the Times that I think sort of alerted you to talking to me about this is, like, I never understood why sex content, and particularly the kind of content we did in Glamour, was ever deemed as anything down market or something to look down your nose at, because I don't see relationships between human beings as being this terrible, dirty secret, but we continue as a species to somehow cast it that way when it's basically the basis by which we're all here.
Mm. Or could it be people were looking down their noses at female sexuality and female thinking about relationships?
No, I think yes, but I think if you look to the popular magazines in the men's magazine space at the time, I'm thinking about all the so-called lads magazines with their very sort of flashy covers and racy cover lines about girls, you know, honeys on the high street and girls who want to have sex with you and all of that stuff. They certainly weren't getting the upmarket advertising either. So there's something about, you know, highbrow fashion houses and expensive luxury brands that ironically think that's all grubby and dirty, but then they will also themselves have really quite risque imagery sometimes to sell their products.
Yeah. Was it different? It must be towards, like, you were doing this for 17 years to think up three new topics. I mean, there's only so many ways of doing it.
Honestly, tell me about it. It was like that and fashion cover lines were always like, how is, again, Nicholas used to use this phrase, new wine in old bottles, old wine in new bottles. So it's like this, everyone wants the same basic kind of questions answered and issues discussed. But how do we package it so they think, oh, I haven't read this before? And that's your challenge as an editor.
And did part of that at least involve relying upon kind of having quizzes?
Yeah, of course. And mashing up different hybrids. So, oh, we haven't done a fashion slanted sex personality quiz. We haven't done anything on horoscopes and sex for a while. Sometimes I felt like just shoving a load of words into a bowl, Tom Bowler style, and mashing up subject matters together and just seeing if that would do anything. Sometimes I did do that.
Who wrote the quizzes then?
Well, everybody. We had a team of brilliant feature writers, but we also had at our beck and call brilliant psychologists, brilliant sex therapists, all sorts of manner of people. You know, it wasn't just random. We really cared about what was written and who was writing it. But they'd had to be accurate. It had to be sensitive. It had to be very well researched and on brand with whatever was new in the space of that research. So, and that's the one thing, is like, in terms of mining new content, there is always something going on in psychology and in medical reports and you know, and all of, and loads of different surveys. There's always, there was always new fodder to mine.
Mm. And a certain amount of it from, and not just in Glamour, but a lot of magazines of the time were kind of what do men really think kind of type investigations. In your time as editor, did you discover things about what men think and what were they? Because I'd really love to know.
I think that, and certainly talking to my own husband about this a lot, is that I think that men are, forgive me, men, probably far less complicated creatures than overthinking women tend to think. So it's like we're over here torturing ourselves with what you're thinking.
Yeah. I just a few weeks back I interviewed a very successful Irish writer, Liz Nugent, and she said that she much prefers to write male characters because they have less thoughts.
Yeah. Well, I always think about, there's an image of Homer Simpson and someone's wondering what he thinks. And in his head, there's a monkey on a unicycle playing a tambourine. And, you know, and I think that that probably, I think men are better than women at living in the now and not overthinking things. And that's what I think, if I had a theme to pick from my years at Glamour, is that they like having sex. They like the woman they want to have sex with. They're not really thinking about it much beyond that. They're not looking at your thighs or thinking about that stupid thing you said 6 weeks ago. They're just really happy to be with you now and here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Joe, the monkey on the unicycle tells me it's time to get off the unicycle. Thanks a million for talking to us today. Joe Elvin was the former editor of UK Glamour magazine. Joe, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.